I wanted to ask about the guru who's taking the karma of the devotee when you have a spiritual master, so kind of taking your karma, that's what I understood. And so what is the consequences on the guru disciple when you take the karma, and what karma especially is taking, and what about if the disciple doesn't respect the four principles?
Yeah.
What is the consequence of the guru?
Yeah, so the guru is taking the karma of the disciple. Of course, that should be understood in context. The guru is not like a big incinerator of karma. You understand? Incinerator? Like an oven of fire that burns up everyone's karma. However, it's like this. Someone who's a guru is very deep in their devotion and very deep in their commitment in their spiritual practice. And therefore it's said that the fire of their devotion is very, very powerful. And therefore, out of compassion, someone who's a guru wants to help many others, and therefore they take that position, they take that responsibility to say, like, I will try to help this person also achieve perfection. And to some extent, then the guru takes the responsibility that if there is some discrepancy, if there is some mistake on the part of the disciple, then the guru will cover that. However, the guru-disciple relationship remains as long as the disciple is following the vows. So it's not that if someone gets initiated and then they stop following the vows and do all kinds of things, that the guru is going to continue taking the karma, because then the relationship is somewhat not there, the connection is not there in that sense. Because the connection with the guru is through the vows. So, as long as a disciple is following, and as long as a disciple is sincere, then if there is some mistake, because there can always be mistakes, even when one has good intention, so then it's said that the guru will cover that up by their devotion. However, if one becomes completely neglectful, that's a different thing. So it should be understood in context. Yeah? The relationship is based on the strength of the commitment that is made on both parts. So the guru is committed to the disciple, but the disciple must also be committed to the guru. And the commitment is shown through the adherence to the vows that they take. And yeah, if disciples do follow their vows generally, but still they're engaging in activities which are not, which are not nice, let's just say like that, then because the relationship is there, then the guru is taking some level of suffering. So that's a very big responsibility on the part of the disciples.
Can I ask another question? Sorry.
Yeah.
Is it scary for like you, for example, to be a dikshadu, like you, because like it's a big responsibility for the guru, like you're taking the karma, so sometimes there can be some consequences on you, like you can be sick or I don't know. Is it like is it like scary for you, for example? I know maybe you're gonna be dikshaguru in 2 years, something like this, I heard.
That would be much more if that's what the Vaishnavas want. That would be much longer down the line. So leave me aside. But we'll talk in principle that's what a saintly person does. That's what Srila Prabhupada did. He was ready. He was ready to undergo all difficulty to help others. I mean, Srila Prabhupada came off a ship on which he had two heart attacks. And you know, like if you would have two heart attacks and then land somewhere, like the first thing you would probably do is go to the hospital and get it checked out. But Prabhupada didn't. He just had two heart attacks, somehow he survived, he came off the ship, he went underneath the tree, he took a pair of kartals and he just started chanting Hare Krishna. Because he was on a mission to help others. So, so that's what saintly people do. Saintly people are ready to take the suffering. Why? Because they see another suffering as their own. You see, like, it's hard to imagine, but imagine you have some suffering you're undergoing. What's your immediate reaction is to eliminate that suffering. It's like, you don't need to be told that. Like if Jay's suffering and then like he puts a plaster on his finger because it's bleeding, we're not like, oh Jay, you're so compassionate to yourself. And it's like, it's obvious. He's in suffering, so obviously he's going to put a plaster. We don't think he's saintly because he does that. It's so obvious. So it's hard to imagine, but a saintly person feels another person's suffering to be just like their own. And so when they're undergoing suffering to help others, they don't even think like, oh my God, I'm going to suffer now. Am I really sure I want to do this? Like, I don't know, like it's going to be tough. It's like, it's just like one of us cutting our hand and putting a plaster on it. It's that natural. Hard to imagine. The Sanskrit term is para dukkha dukhi. They feel another suffering to be just like their own. And therefore, for them to be compassionate, they almost do it unconsciously because they're at that level of evolved consciousness. So,
how does one know when someone is their guru, or the defining factors happen, would be truly convinced that this person is going to be the guru? Because there's many options.
Most important is hearing. All of the devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement will inspire us. But as we hear many different devotees, then we'll connect with the presentation, with the words, with the Krishna consciousness of a particular personality. The things that they say, the way they present the philosophy, the inspiration that they generate within our heart, and the faith that they build within us through their words, will make it very clear that this is a person who is the via medium of Krishna's message for me. So mainly it's done through hearing. And you know, it's like it's a difficult question to answer because you'll just know it. It's like, it will become very, very clear. But the main thing is to listen very, very attentively. And then your questions will be answered, your doubts will be cleared, your faith will be built, and that person will inspire you to just dedicate your life to the most important thing, which is finding happiness with Krishna. So yeah, just hear. And pray and ask Krishna to make it clear, and then it will be clear. But we should hear from many different personalities, many different gurus, senior people, and in this way try to understand who is Krishna directing me towards. We all follow the same process, but we all have our own personalities. And therefore there are many ways to practice spiritual life, even within the Krishna consciousness movement. So you have to find someone who you feel very much connected to in terms of their practice and communication of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. I have a few questions there. Package in one, maybe. But how to deal with the reaction of you of other people, like that you have known before you came to Krishna consciousness, when you tell them about them, because it's a whole other world and it's so difficult to understand. And how did you deal with that? And I was also asking myself, why did your father like want to sign a contract? Because he said he was brought up in a Hindu family, so they also believe in Krishna, so I thought they should have been happy for you and they should have agreed with you, so I didn't really understand that.
Yeah. So how do we explain Krishna consciousness or our spiritual path to maybe people who knew us before who find it very difficult to accept? The first thing is their reaction is quite natural, actually, because they have a relationship with you and they've known you in a certain way, and now they see you changing. And change is difficult for people. So when they see you changing, they feel like maybe they're going to lose their relationship with you. And therefore, it comes out in different ways. Sometimes they're angry, sometimes they say not very nice things, sometimes they're very negative. But actually what's going on in their heart is they're scared they're going to lose a relationship with you. And so the first thing is, when someone, our family, our friends, are concerned, I can tell you what not to do, which is what I did do, which is to kind of look down at them, tell them they're wrong, tell them, you know, they should be happy for me, why are they not happy for me, like, and to become very aggressive. And I think part of the reason my parents had a bad reaction, I have to be honest, it was part of my reaction to them when they expressed concerns. If I had been a little bit more patient, if I had been a little bit more understanding, if I had tried to appreciate the many things they've given me, and if I had taken the time to explain Krishna consciousness to them in a nicer and more patient way, then maybe they would have reacted differently. So your family, your friends, first thing is it's natural. They're concerned about you. And also because they don't know, they may think you're getting into something dangerous. You know, they're also scared for you. So somehow or other, we got to remain like a little bit normal. Sometimes when we come to spiritual life, we also become a little bit abnormal, and then it's like we create more distance with others. So we got to be relatable. At the same time, if there, you know, if there are challenges where they're actively kind of blocking your spiritual journey, then you may need to see how to deal with that. But on the whole, be patient, be understanding, and try to convince them about Krishna consciousness, not on the basis of philosophy, but on the basis of you becoming a better person. If they see that you have all the knowledge, all the answers, but as a person they don't see better qualities in you, they will not be convinced. But even if you tell them nothing about the philosophy, but they see that by practicing spiritual life you live in a better way, you relate to people in a better way, you're kinder, you're more tolerant, you're more humble. It may take a bit of time, but their heart will be conquered by that. So it's difficult, because I'm sure amongst everyone that knows you, there will be maybe some that are more outspoken than others, and some that are more actively blocking your spiritual life than others. That's the reality, we know that. So So the general advice I'm giving you, and then in those very more intense situations, then you have to see, according to the situation, how to deal with it. My parents came from an Indian background, they worship Krishna. But they said to me, don't become too religious. It's okay, it's nice on, like, you know, for a few hours a week. That's like a reasonable amount of religion in your life. More than that, you know. So that is the general conception that people have of religion, that it's just a little, another little aspect of your life, or spirituality is just another little aspect. But we're spiritual searchers, we're not just looking to add a little bit, we're trying to find the truth. And so then when we begin to take it on a level of seriousness which other people may not in their life, it becomes scary for them. So, and you know, your mom wants to see you married. She wants to see you have a good job. She wants to see grandchildren. Right? That's like natural. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he took sannyas at age 24, he became a full renunciate. His mother did not agree. And that's the mother of the Supreme Personality of God. It's difficult for parents. I don't know, I'm not a parent, so I don't know what it feels like to have a child. But I can imagine they've seen you for your whole life. They were with you before you were even born. Your mother was with you before you were even born. I mean, that's a long time. So it's like, it's natural. Affection is natural. So we have to be a little bit understanding, a little bit patient. But inside of you, your spiritual journey must continue. But externally, you have to relate in an expert way in order to inspire those around you. It's a difficult balance. But you can find that balance. You were saying that, right, to me, Jay, that the best thing you did was, like, through your character, you found that was
adding. With family, yes. That's the best preaching.
Yeah.
It's my behavior. By philosophy. It didn't work with my family. To put the philosophy on the table, it didn't work. Only by behavior it started working. Yeah, that is the right path.
I was a good kid when I grew up. Like, I never told any lies. I never stayed out late. I never, like, had any arguments with my parents. I never spoke back to them. And then after I came to Krishna consciousness, I started lying to them. I started staying out late. I started speaking back to them. So they're thinking, hang on, you've taken up spiritual life, you're becoming a worse person. So like, we have to see it from their point of view. Like, we're on our path. We're on our path and we're moving, but also with others around us, we have to try and see it from their point of view. So somehow you have to balance it, like, be kind and patient with them, but internally make sure your spiritual journey continues. Balance it. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, I just had while you were talking, I had a second question come up. What is actually the difference between religion and spirituality?
Well,
because you use both words, and I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, there's no difference between religion and spirituality. Religion comes from the Latin religare. Re means again, and ligare means to connect or to link. So religion literally means that thing which connects you. And spirituality means to connect with the spirit. It's the same thing. So in one sense, religion and spirituality are meant for the same thing. The reason I used it differently is because religion tends to kind of, I guess, be more about the rules, the regulation, the identity, the culture, the institution. And sometimes you can do all of those things and miss the essence of what it's really about. And so spirituality is the essence of religion, you can say, in that sense. So therefore sometimes we say, like Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion. Because he's referring to religion in the sense of very superficial religion, or ritualistic religion, or religion in which you do so many things but you don't find the essence of the connection with God. So I guess that's the difference between religion and spirituality, although in essence they're supposed to do the same thing.
Yes, je voulais demander ton avis sur quelque chose. Qu'est-ce que tu en pensais du fait de ne pas être que dans la conscience de Krishna, mais par exemple avoir envie de s'intéresser à la conscience de Krishna, mais en même temps de s'intéresser à d'autres cultures comme le bouddhisme, le taoïsme, plein de choses comme ça, de s'inspirer et de garder la maîtrise de soi par rapport à tout ça, tout en prenant un peu le bon dans tout ça, ce qui nous intéresse pour nous, ce qu'on sent pour nous. Toi tu es issu d'une famille qui est d'un courant hindouiste, donc ça parle beaucoup plus pour toi, mais moi par exemple, je suis intéressé par quelques points de la conscience de Krishna, mais pas surtout, il y a aussi d'autres choses qui m'intéressent et j'aime bien mélanger un peu tout. Je voulais avoir ton avis, ce que tu en pensais.
He wants to know what you think about this. He's interested in certain aspects of Krishna consciousness, but not everything. And there are some aspects of Buddhism and Taoism and other cultures that he's interested in. So he's wondering what you think of taking little bits of everything and putting it all together and making your own combo.
Well, thank you for being honest, first of all. And I appreciate you being very straightforward about how you feel, and I think that's very, very good. In essence, every religion, every genuine spiritual path is pointing towards the same direction. And so, there is truth in all religion. And there are wonderful and beautiful things in all religion. One of our teachers, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that when you go into a church, you should see that here is my same God being worshipped in songs of a different language, in a culture of a different nationality, but with the same heart and devotion. Krishna consciousness does not have a monopoly on spirituality. We do not stand here and say no one outside of these four walls has a connection with God. In fact, I've met people from Muslim background, from Christian background, from Buddhist background, who I can say for sure are more connected than myself. I appreciate them very greatly. So the first point I want to make is that we respect everyone. However, the email is coming. In order to make your spiritual connection, you need to follow a process. And every spiritual tradition gives a process. Each process is complete in itself, in its own right. And therefore, if one follows the process of Christianity, they will get. If one follows the process of Krishna consciousness, they will get. The problem when we take from different places is that we may be missing out certain things which are vital elements of the process. If I ask you, on what basis do you accept certain things of one religion and reject other things of a religion? On what basis are you making that decision?
Par exemple, dans la conscience de Krishna, j'aime beaucoup la connexion avec le divin, j'aime beaucoup la forme de dévotion en mangeant le prasadam, en dansant, j'aime beaucoup ça. Et par exemple, en prenant une autre religion, par exemple, le bouddhisme, j'aime beaucoup parce que c'est très introspectif, on a l'impression de... Enfin voilà, j'ai l'impression que vraiment on travaille des points, mais on ne parle pas de l'âme, on ne parle pas de ça. Et au final, j'ai l'impression que, pour mon point de vue, des fois c'est pas forcément complet. Et j'ai l'impression que si je me dirige dans une religion, je vais voir que ça, et j'aurai pas du coup une ouverture plus grande. Voilà. Ah, sorry.
He likes the aspect that we connect with the divine through prasadam, through dancing and singing. But in Buddhism, he also likes the introspection and the fact that you're really trying to work on yourself. And he's afraid that if you choose one path, then you become narrow-minded and you can't see everything and you maybe miss out on certain things.
Again, I think there's truth in what you're saying. We in Krishna consciousness, like I read into different religions also, and I feel nourished by their insights. For example, recently I was reading of a practice of Christian monks called Lectio Divina. I don't know if you ever heard of it. But this is a spiritual practice of Christian monks where they read one sentence from one of their scriptures and then they go into a deep meditation trying to understand and uncover and go into a deeper meaning. And their reading becomes like a meditation. And so I was reading about that and I thought, wow, we can do that in Krishna consciousness as well. So there's no problem with taking from different traditions and being inspired by that. But what I'm saying is that if you want a process to work, then you need to follow the elements of that process, some of which may be natural, some of which may be difficult, and some of which may be challenging also. There's a proverb in Bengali, and basically it's like this. There was once a chicken, and the chicken was laying many, many eggs. And the owner was very, very happy. But the owner was not happy because the other side of the chicken, the mouth, was also eating a lot. So he said, well, I just want the eggs. And the other side is just taking. So I'll just cut off the head. So he cut off the head, and cut off the head means no eggs. So there is, you just have to be careful of that. That in a process, you don't just try to take the things that are natural, beneficial, and which come very easily to you, and neglect the things that are challenging, difficult, or force you to kind of adapt yourself. If you're able to embrace both aspects, then you'll achieve a bigger evolution in your spiritual life. And following the entire practice of Krishna consciousness, doesn't mean that you can't learn from other traditions. You can. You can. And you don't have to become narrow-minded. In fact, you should become more broad-minded. I'm giving you this quote by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who says, when you go into church, you should see. This is also bona fide spirituality.
Okay. Okay. Okay, d'accord. Okay. Mais je pense que c'est le processus, par exemple, pour une personne comme moi. Pour une personne comme moi, c'est il va être plus long, j'ai l'impression, parce que par exemple, j'avais une vie très matérielle avant, je ne suis pas allé dans une famille spirituelle. J'ai développé des défauts dans le monde, dans le milieu spirituel. Et donc, du coup, le processus pour que j'arrive à une certaine illumination peut être beaucoup plus long qu'une personne comme toi, par exemple, qui était, comme tu disais hier, de nature assez simple, née avec deux parents hindouistes.
So, and in his mature life, he developed lots of bad qualities, so it feels like the process would take a lot longer for him than it did for you, for example, because you had like a Hindu upbringing.
Et comment dire, avec et donc du coup, pour toi, tu cherches directement ça, et pour toi, l'objectif est certainement la réussite de ce processus dans la conscience de Krishna. Mais moi, par exemple, je me rends compte que c'est très intéressant, j'ai écouté tout ce que tu as dit, les étapes que tu veux passer, le processus qu'il y a pour arriver jusqu'à l'illumination.
So, for you, it's very clear that you want to go to the highest goal directly.
Et pour moi, je me rends compte que c'est très inspirant, ok, mais par exemple, je suis plus aspiré par l'immensité de la vie, toutes les opportunités. À un moment, je peux être dans une philosophie et du jour au lendemain, je peux remettre tout en question ce que je pense et être dans une autre et toujours. Oui, et pour moi, cet objectif, c'est peut-être pas l'illumination, mais d'une certaine façon, j'aurais pu m'imprégner de beaucoup de philosophie, de beaucoup de voir comment me mettre dans la peau des gens de plusieurs façons. Puis je pense qu'au bout d'un moment, je trouverai ma voie, mais je pense que suivre un processus pour des personnes qui sont nées, par exemple, en Europe, où c'est un endroit qui n'est pas spirituel, suivre ce processus, c'est très difficile parce que ça ne nous parle pas. C'est très compliqué de se connecter à ça, mais moi, je le sens.
Attends. J'ai oublié ce qu'il a dit. So, he's not, maybe not looking for the goal of enlightenment. He's more inspired by bathing in all sorts of philosophies and trying out everything, and then maybe eventually finding a path, but at the moment he just wants to try it.
That's absolutely fine. You don't have to pressure yourself to be like committed. Explore. No problem. Explore, see. Even Krishna says to Arjuna, think about what I've said. Think about what I've said. And then you have to make a decision according to your mind. So, I think you're an intelligent person, you're searching for, you know, your spiritual, natural spiritual inclination, and all of us require different things. All I'm saying is that be careful of like, taking the things that are natural and easy. Also challenge yourself in spirituality, And my second thing would be that you want to experience something spiritual, not just know about something spiritual. Yeah, like some people know about God and some people know God. Right? We don't want to just know about God. We want to know God. We want to experience God. We want to feel connection. And for that, it requires a process. So the other only second point I would say to you is that in all your searching, also try to experience and practice something. Because then you will feel, you will come to more conclusions through that. But yes, Krishna consciousness, if you feel that you need to, you can, maybe you've read Radhanath Swami's book, Journey Home, maybe you can give to, maybe you can give to Prabhu.
J'étais parlé de ça plusieurs fois. Oui, mais j'ai un peu du mal avec le sanskrit, j'ai pas de repères, c'était ce livre.
So Radhanath Swami went traveling all the way overland from Europe to India. He stopped in many, many places. He stopped in places where people were practicing Islam, places where people were practicing Christianity. He went through India and met many, many yogis. And he learned many, many things from all of them. And eventually he found his path. So if you feel like you need to go on a journey, no problem. Because we can't tell you, practice Krishna consciousness. You have to do it. We're going to lock the door.
Yes. Mais, yes. Je suis d'accord avec toi.
Follow your calling. No problem. Follow your calling.
Okay.
And,
c'est ce que je vais faire.
Always take prasadam.
Yes. C'est ce que je vais faire, mais quand j'entends ça de ta bouche, c'est agréable, mais des fois, quand j'entends d'autres personnes, j'ai l'impression que c'est que cette façon dont tu es heureux, et les gens parlent avec beaucoup de subjectivité, et du coup, c'est des fois, c'est avec beaucoup de personnes qui sont... Je pense que ce n'est pas que dans la conscience de Krishna, c'est avec beaucoup de personnes qui dédient leur vie à une religion. Et donc du coup, des fois, ça bloque, parce qu'on dit « Non, c'est que comme ça que tu peux être heureux. » Et moi, ça me bloque, alors que je pense qu'il y a beaucoup de façons, comme tu disais, ça, c'est immense, les possibilités pour trouver ton chemin.
So, yes, that's what he's going to do. He wants to go and explore, and he's very happy to hear you saying that. But there's many other people in Krishna consciousness, but also other traditions who say, no, it's only like this you can be happy, you have to do this, don't do anything else, and that really blocks him and doesn't want to do it so much.
We all practice spiritual life and we have our realizations, we have our experiences. And some of us will share those experiences with you and say, this is the highest. Yeah, I'm sitting before you here today and I can also tell you, Krishna consciousness is the highest according to my experience. But I think hearing you have to go on your journey. So... as I said, even in the Krishna consciousness movement, there are many individuals. And maybe another speaker sitting here would tell you, no, Krishna consciousness is the way. But I don't feel that I should say that to you. Because I feel that you exploring, and with your good heart and with your sincerity, ultimately you'll come to the truth that you're looking for. But you must be sincere. You must be looking for the truth. That's the only thing. we shouldn't be looking for some immediate benefit or something that's easy or something that makes us feel good, because those things may not lead you to the truth. So if you're sincere and you're ready to embrace even something which forces you to come out of your comfort zone to experience, then you'll find the truth. But this was my answer, and another devotee might say to me, how could you say that answer to him? I'm ready for someone to say that, but this is my heart. I'm speaking my heart to you. So, and I'm not saying that you will go somewhere else and be dissatisfied. I think you will go other places and find great spirituality there. But, and I think maybe all of those experiences will build up and bring you to what you're really looking for. So, it's wonderful. It's a journey. But maybe you can give him Journey Home. That would be a really good book for you to read. The Journey Home by Radhanaswami.
It's in English.
It's not in French?
It's
not in French.
In the future, it's translated.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
yes, well, I learn English, it's most important. Thank you for your response. Yes. Moi, je voulais faire en français. Non, mais c'est. I try in English. Just another question, just. Really, you. I like you. Really? I ask you it for you because I have a question. You have example for consciousness for Krishna, because you don't just practice the ritual. You practice the philosophy and you live philosophy, and we feel that, all the people feel that, and when you tell all the people, yes, he embrace consciousness for Krishna, and yes, you are beautiful people. Yes, I like you. Thank you.
And one last thing I'll say on what you said, that you were mentioning you have many bad habits or a different upbringing to me. All of us come to spiritual life with certain strengths and certain weaknesses. I'm not sure where you live, but you've left many things behind to come and live in a monastery. How old are you?
21.
21, right? So that, okay, I did also 21, but maybe you were earlier than me. So you made a big sacrifice. So you were ready to take a risk. That means you have some sincerity, you're searching. So you come with your own strengths. So, anyone who comes to spiritual life already has many, many experiences from previous lives. So, it's not just this life and what's happened. You've gained many, many things from previous lives as well, and now you're just picking up. So, don't underestimate how much you have. Yeah, you can do it.
Can I ask one last question? As you see, there are many people interested by your lessons and by you, I mean, as teacher. And we are wondering if you are giving some courses or you have a page or something that we can, I don't know, something like this?
Yes, we... So I can give the details maybe to Gandharvika.
Okay, nice.
There's like a website and some lectures you can listen to. And,
how long do you stay here?
We're leaving tomorrow.
No!
Yeah, we're leaving tomorrow morning. But we hope to be back maybe in the new year at some point.
January.
yeah, so... Yeah, there are many wonderful devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement. So you can hear also on the internet from many. Yeah, you all are like really inspiring to us. We were just talking the other day about how all of you add so much to the atmosphere of New Mayapur. You bring so much energy, you bring so much love and community and warmth. Yeah. I'm sure you'll look back at these days, you know, maybe 10 years from now, 15 years from now, and you'll have very beautiful memories. Yes.
Because I met a man in the street, and he was actually passing by bus near the place where we were distributing books. And when he saw us in orange, he like immediately got out of the bus in the next station, and he came to meet us, and he came to speak with me. So 30 years ago, in 1980, he was in Himalayapur. He was here for only 3 weeks, 40 years ago. And you remind this as the best moment of his life. And I could see that he meant what he was speaking, the joy that he emphasizes in his words. And he was here for 3 weeks. And he said, well, then they asked me to shave. And I was not ready. But, I mean, just to the point that 10 years later you will look back and you will smile. Well, even 40 years later, you will look back and you will smile. You know, and he's very eager to come back and to associate with the devotee. He's been trying to contact me and I've been trying to meet him. Because it left such a mark, an imprint in his heart. So this Krishna consciousness is something very deep and very touching to the soul. Even some little service that we do with sincerity, Krishna will keep an eye on us from there.
Yeah. You all are very dear to us, whether you shave your head or not, whether you put on a sari or not. We're not here to make you into a religious robot. We're here to have friendship and help each other to find ourselves. And whatever we share, we're just sharing from whatever experience we have. And we're happy for you to find yourself. You know, that's the goal of life. That's the goal of life. So, yeah, we hope that you don't feel pressured like that. That's not the purpose. And some devotees may say like that to you out of their like eagerness, their great care and concern for you. They may sometimes say something that feels a little uncomfortable. They don't mean like that. They want you to be happy, and they maybe have a certain idea. I get to tell you one story. Once I was in London and I was distributing books. It was very, very cold, like -5 Celsius, like very cold. So as I was on the street giving out books to people, one old lady came to me. So she said, "Who are you and what are you doing?" I said, "I'm a monk and we give out spiritual knowledge." And her jaw dropped. She said, "That is amazing." She was like half my height. And then she said, "I'm Christian." And then from her heart, she was saying, "You should be a Christian. Jesus is the only way." But she said it, I could see she was saying it from her heart. I didn't feel like it was like someone fanatic. Yeah? But she was telling me very straight. Jesus is the only way, if you surrender to Jesus, you'll find happiness. Otherwise, you'll have a very dark future. Like, she was saying very heavy things. But I felt it was from her heart. So I said, I looked at her. Said, thank you. I appreciate your devotion. Somehow this is my truth. I found it. So she kind of left me with, like, I could see there was almost a tear in her eye. Anyway, then she walked off. After 15 minutes, she came back and she sat on the bench. Okay, in -5. And she was looking at me. So I continued distributing books for about 5 hours. And she sat there for 5 hours. I could see she was still sitting there, but I didn't go. Then I packed my book box. I was walking off the street. As I was walking away, she came running to me. And she said, you're an amazing person. You're doing so much for God. I have to give you one thing. And from her bag, she had brought like a Bible from the shop. A deluxe Bible. It was a very nice book, actually. And she said, I want to give you this. Please read it. And in that moment, I thought to myself, I've been standing out here for 6 hours giving books to all of these people, but I never gave one book to any one of those people with the level of compassion, care, and concern that she gave that book to me. And as I walked away, I realized Krishna was telling me, have the compassion of that lady. Some people love to preach, but more important than that is to love the people you preach to. And so, although what she said was very, like, in one sense, very heavy, I understood the language of her heart. And I realized I have to learn many things from her. So we can learn from everyone. You know, she taught me about compassion that day. I would never sit on a bench for 5 hours to give a book to someone who didn't want it. But she had that compassion. Did I give her a book? No, she wasn't willing to take a book somehow. But I took the Bible. I did take it. I didn't read it. I have read parts of the Bible. So, there are spiritual people everywhere. And I guess that's why I told you that story, and the other reason I told you that story is just to show that even though someone's language may be in a certain way, behind it there is heart, there is concern. And so sometimes even devotees, they may say very strong things, but there's a heart. Anyone else? Questions? Yes.
I have maybe like 2 questions.
Yeah.
So as we go deeper with japa, straight with devotional life, our consciousness becomes more subtle, and situations that were previously very present become very disturbing.
Okay, let me just do that one first. When you become more spiritual, you become more sensitive. But simultaneously you become stronger. Both things are there. One English writer says, peace is not an absence of chaos, but peace is the presence of God in every situation. And so as you become more connected to Krishna, as you become more connected in your spiritual consciousness, you do become more sensitive, but because you are able to bring spiritual knowledge, spiritual realization, spiritual strength, you realize the sensitivity around you, you're sensitive to it, but you're simultaneously empowered with strength. And so both things should actually come. And in that way, you can remain unaffected. So, yes, have you experienced that? That you also have strength?
Yeah.
You can perceive a situation, like sometimes you can perceive people's emotions, you can perceive negativity, you can perceive things more, but also because you've got Krishna consciousness, you're able to respond to it through a different lens. You know? So in that sense you have, you see, like here's a cup, and if I put a fistful of salt in this cup, then the water becomes very salty. You can taste it. Now if we fill this entire room with water and I put a fistful of salt, practically you would not feel the effect, because the vastness of the water absorbs it. So similarly, your consciousness when you become spiritual becomes oceanic. And therefore, although you know the salt is coming in, you're sensitive to that. The vastness of your consciousness absorbs it and practically means that it remains unaffected. So we have to become deep. We have to become deep in our awareness of life, awareness of everything. That depth must come. Sometimes people ask me if I ever had any, like, I was in Paris and Revati Nandan in the middle of the night wakes me up and says, "Do you ever see Krishna? Do you ever see Krishna?" At this time of the night. I never saw Krishna. Not yet. One devotee said, "I've never seen Krishna's face, but I see Krishna's hands every day." May not see Krishna's face, but you see Krishna's arrangements going on every day, if you're sensitive. Japa, I can share with you like my most, not most, but the experience I have of japa, which really... I guess gives me a lot of faith in japa and the holy name. In the Gita, Krishna mentions in one verse, "Brahma Bhuta Prashannatma Nasochati Nakamshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madhbhaktim Labhate Param." Krishna says, when one reaches the level of Brahman, the level of spiritual realization, Nasochati Na kangshati, they have no lamentation and they have no hankering. Lamentation means absorption in the past. and hankering means absorption in the future. And therefore one who reaches a spiritual level almost immediately comes into the present. Now practically the whole world is not able to live in the present. Why are we not able to live in the present? Because we're not satisfied with the present. We feel some lacking in the present. And therefore we're always looking back or we're always looking forward. You know, like I was explaining, it's like you ever watch one of those movies where the sound is dubbed? So it's like the person speaking and there's a delay on the sound. So it's like they're speaking and then you kind of hear the sound later. It's like so annoying that you can't watch a movie like that because it's all out of sync. It's not synchronized. And sometimes our life is like that. We're moving, but our thoughts are like a few little bit back, or our thoughts are like a little bit forward, and we're never like completely aligned. My strong experience with japa is that when you connect with the holy name, you immediately can come into the present. And I've never experienced anything in life like that, where you just immediately, the past disappears, the future disappears, and you're just there. And that gives me a lot of faith in japa, because it gives me the faith that through this process you can actually connect with God. Because it's only that spiritual connection that can bring you completely into the present. And therefore, I've experienced that many, many times. Not every day. Some days I'm falling asleep. But I've experienced that. It's very powerful. And you almost feel that you could just remain. And I've never experienced like anything like that in life. So I think that's one of the greatest things that gives me faith in japa. Like, in terms of the experience while doing japa. But then I find a lot of experience of japa comes from the rest of my day after I chant well. I can see a change in my consciousness, in my relationships, in my quality of response to whatever happens in life. And I can only put it down to good chanting. So, as we chant better and better, then you will see that all your strength, all your inspiration, all your enthusiasm, all your good qualities come from Krishna, which ultimately comes from connecting with Krishna through japa. So, these are the kind of experiences that I've personally had. Yeah, Krishna didn't appear yet, but many other things which for me are very strong indications that Krishna is there. But it's a practice, and some days are good, some days are challenging. It's like that. You can't chant also to try and get an experience. If you chant to try to get an experience of Krishna, Krishna heights. So you have to chant with sincerity or longing to be with Krishna, serve Krishna.
Isn't the spiritual master a manifestation of Krishna? Or
Yeah, Krishna is appearing to us in many, many different ways, yes.
Is that then Krishna, or is the spiritual master is two different, separate, or is really Krishna standing there in the form of the spiritual master?
But the spiritual master is not Krishna. The spiritual master is the representative of Krishna.
Okay.
But Krishna is in the heart of the spiritual master.
Mm.
And so Krishna is also there.
Mm.
So,
may I ask a question related to spiritual master? For example, if in past lives
would have taken a spiritual master. Because we have seen Jani Jani Prabhu say, life after life. So I've asked this question, but I've not fully understand it, because it's like...
So is it the same spiritual master that comes to you life after life?
Yeah, well, we have one spiritual master and one path of devotion.
Yeah. The standard understanding, as I've read from Shastra, from scripture, is that the spiritual master can deliver in two ways. Either he can deliver by directly coming, or he can deliver by sending a representative. And so the person who comes to help you in this life may not necessarily be your eternal spiritual master, but they are a representative, and in one sense, the Vedic aphorism says Guru is one. So actually Guru is one in the sense that the one Guru appears in many, many different ways in order to help the disciple. So these are somewhat inconceivable subject matters, but yeah. So we don't, it's hard to know. It's hard to know.
How to love Krishna always more?
Love means service. One devotee once said a nice thing to me, and I think it's very, very apt. He said, I don't know how much I love Krishna, but I love to serve Krishna. I fell in love with devotional service. I fell in love with selfless seva. If you fall in love with service, you'll find love. Everything comes from service. So if we become very enthusiastic to serve Krishna, to serve the Vaishnavas, to serve Srila Prabhupada, to serve without calculation. Some days we have good days, and some days we're a bit grumpy, like, nah, I'm going to do that. But the more we become more and more open-hearted in our desire to serve, then through service, love comes. So, we may sometimes think, I have no love for Krishna. But if we learn to fall in love with devotional service, then everything will come from that. Yeah.
How do you deepen your relationship with your spiritual master?
The greatest gift that the spiritual master gives us is the is his instructions or her instructions. And so the more we honor that, the more we follow those instructions, the more we take those instructions into our heart and really try to fulfill those desires of the spiritual master, then we will have a much closer connection. Because the spiritual master knows exactly what you need. They know what you need. And everyone needs something different. And so when the spiritual master gives instructions, they're giving you the key. And if you take that key and you put it into the lock and you turn it, then it opens the door and you can walk into the spiritual world. So those instructions are very important. That's the kind of question you could answer in different ways on different days. But today, that's how I got inspired to answer. Yeah.
I'm taking my chance because you're leaving tomorrow. So it's a bit of a long question, but the more I think about it, the more I'm getting... It's kind of the same question every time. So Krishna is Rishikesh, he's the master of the senses. And when he comes to the arena of Kamsa, he appears differently to different people there. And for some, he said he appears as Brahman, as Paramatma, he appears as Bhagavan. And if he asks, if even the power of me perceiving something is depending on him, and the way that he shows himself is ever changing according to each individual's desire, is there something such as reality that we share together, or is it because it's really depending on how we want to see Krishna, is the absolute truth? So is there, how to say, it's changing according to each person's desire, so is there
a defined,
Okay, I'll say something, I don't know if it will answer your question. If I don't, if I've missed the question, you can tell me. Well, Krishna says in the Gita, Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam stateva pajamiyaham mam vartma nuvartante manushya parita sarvasha. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So it is not so much that your desire is creating a certain vision of Krishna. What your desire is doing is that by your desire, Krishna is observing your desire. Mm-hmm. And then he's manifesting himself in a certain way. Mm. So Krishna, you can't do anything without Krishna's help. Mm. So if someone wants to see Krishna in a certain way, then Krishna in the heart manifests himself in that way. You can't even be an atheist without Krishna's help. That's an interesting one. I thought about that. If you want to be an atheist, you need Krishna's help. Because Krishna, what he'll do is he'll supply you with the intelligence to so-called explain himself out of the whole equation of the material world. That's amazing. So, it's not, there is reality, but Krishna is Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Ananta Rupam. Krishna has Ananta Rupam, he has unlimited forms. And therefore he can reciprocate with the unlimited desires of every living entity. So, yeah, if someone wants to see Krishna in a certain way, then Krishna fulfills.
I'm asking because if you go to school and you study a bit of physics, science, whatever, and they explain to you the world works like this and like that, and if you do this, this will happen, and we know how the world functions, and it gives agency in some ways because you know that, okay, the world is like this and I can do this and that, but if nothing, if I cannot do anything without Krishna's mercy and he can manifest the world in different ways to different individuals, then I won't have power or anything. It's just I depend completely on him because there's no... He can change how I perceive the world and he can also change the world that I'm perceiving. And it's...
Isn't it linked also to the free will aspect?
So this is what Krishna can change, but he does not interfere with your free will.
Mm.
So the fact that your free will is given by Krishna doesn't mean that Krishna is controlling your free will.
Mm.
So it's like, say, I was giving this example to Jao, that Imagine someone is in prison, and then the prison officer says, okay, today you're free. Then the freedom is given by the prison officer, but what that person then decides to do in the world is decided by that person. It's not that because the prison officer gave the free will, he's now controlling everything he's doing out there. No. So Krishna's like that. He gives free will, and then that free will is yours. Krishna never takes that away. And with that free will, whatever you desire, whatever you want, ultimately, yes, you need Krishna's help. But even materialists need Krishna's help. Everyone needs Krishna's help. Because Krishna says, sarvasya chaham ridhi sannivishto mata smritir jnanam apohanam cha. I'm situated in everyone's heart and I give the necessary knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness in order for them to function. That doesn't mean because Krishna is giving us all of those things that he's controlling our experience. Because